Hi, and welcome back to the show. Today, I am interviewing Justin Pavsic. He is the managing director and founder of Staff Domain, which is a leading outsourcing supplier here based in Manila in the Philippines. And we have him on the show today to talk about some research report that he has orchestrated with Bond University, discussing the 10 critical success factors relating to outsourcing. So it's a great conversation, and we just go on and on well beyond these 10 critical success factors, because I just had so much to discuss with Justin and so much to learn from Justin. So it was a really good conversation. I do hope you'll enjoy, and I also hope that you will learn something also. As always, if you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. Enjoy. This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener, and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Hi, Justin. How are you?
Good, thanks, Derek. How are you?
Fantastic. Fantastic. Justin, I'm super excited to have you on the show. We are going to talk about the 10 critical success factors for outsourcing. And, you know, we've both been in the game long enough to realize that some outsourcing can be absolutely life-changing and business-changing, but some people walk away disappointed, you know, and there can be a bit of a bad reputation about the Philippines and offshore staffing. And so, you know, I know that it's so critical to get people feeling the success of outsourcing and seeing the success. And then once they're sort of there, they're kind of off to the races, aren't they? So I'm really excited to hear about these 10 critical factors. But first of all, you founded Staff Domain. Do you want to just introduce Staff Domain and kind of what you do?
Yeah, sure. So it's really interesting, though, because when we started Staff Domain, the concept was really simple. We wanted to give people a really overall great experience with offshoring. I had been working in the offshoring space for a number of years with a multitude of different vendors, and obviously with differing experiences. For us, the concept was simple. We wanted to come at it from a standpoint of really giving a customer great satisfaction with what they're doing, and obviously walking them through the whole process from front to back. Because a lot of the times what will happen with offshoring solutions, and you've probably seen this yourself a number of times, is they'll bring them in, someone will bring you in, and unfortunately they'll set you up with some staff, and they'll sort of leave you in the lurch, which can be really problematic if you don't know what you're doing, you don't know how to manage remote staff properly. So what we actually did was, initially when we started Staff Domain, we got together with Bond University. And the reason that we got together with Bond University instead of using an external agency to do some research into the marketplace for us is because we wanted it to be really standalone research, irrespective of what the outcome was. We, although we were involved with the research and we did fund the research, it was done on itself independently from us. So we actually commissioned Bond University to do this research for us to find out what were the things that people had suffered from in offshoring and the things that had succeeded for them, right? Because like you mentioned previously, not everyone's experience with offshoring is great. And it was really quite funny. They interviewed over 1,200 firms across Australia, and a lot of them were based in the accounting space. And they spoke to senior level executives inside those firms to get a really good overall understanding of what had worked and what hadn't worked for them. And based on that feedback and the university and the work that we did with Bond, we developed the 10 critical success factors for offshoring.
Wow, that's a huge study, isn't it, to actually to get the opinions of 1,200 businesses. It's quite an undertaking. How long did the entire study take?
I think it was over about 6 months when you could take the initial survey all the way to the final interview and then the collation of the data. It was a significant amount of time, and I got to take my hats off to the guys at Bond. They really went above and beyond with it.
Yeah, wow, fantastic. And Bond University is in Australia for those non-Australians in the audience, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And Bond Business School is probably one of the premier business schools in Australia. And that's why we had engaged with them. They have a really long standing with CPA Australia, which gave us access to a lot of accounting firms, which is obviously one of the more heavily offshored services that that people do.
Great. So what are, without further ado, what are these 10 critical success factors? And does it matter kind of what order they're in, or, you know, is it sort of, well, I suppose, yeah, let us know.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? And when we look at this critical success factors, one thing really runs true through all of them. It begins and ends with people and people management. Obviously, there's lots of procedures and there's lots of tech and different bits and pieces in between. But the reality is you need to start with the right offshoring partner. And the second part, and that's obviously point one. The second part is obviously hiring the right staff. And usually this means hiring senior staff first, okay? And the reason you do that is because that person becomes your cornerstone person to help you manage the rest of your team, a manager onshore for your manager offshore, so to speak. Getting the onshore team comfortable with offshoring is also a really big part of making sure that this is successful. Now, companies that don't fully embrace that, and if they companies that split it up as into two teams, such as this is our Manila team and this is our Australia team, we find a lot less successful than companies that are integrated and call it one holistic team, which obviously came through in the research as well, which is really interesting.
Got it. And in terms of the step one and selecting the right offshore provider, do you get any insight into what is the right provider? Is there sort of objective attributes to the right provider, or is it just, you know, kind of the right fit, the right sort of approach depending on the firm that you're in?
So it's a really interesting question there, Derek. And the funny thing is when you're looking at the right service provider, there are a couple of things to take into consideration. First, what does their technology stack look like internally? Are they using an ATS system? How are they tracking candidates that are coming in? The other things are, what does their technology look like for your staff that they're going to be using? Are they using small monitors? Are they using 24-inch monitors? Are they using business-grade computers? What does that all look like? And what's the experience going to be like for your staff working out of this particular office? Let's be honest, you know, we've all seen photos online of what I call digital sweatshops, right, where there's a room full of 100 people crammed on top of each other working on small tables or pop-up tables or whatever the case may be, you know, in an environment that you or I may not be particularly fond of working in. Well, Philippines people are no different. People want to work in a great working environment. Other things to consider are what kind of employee engagements do they have? What kind of health insurance do they have? How well are they looking after your staff to make sure that you have extremely low attrition? Beyond that, there are the standard things like, you know, how many internet connections they have, what kind of connections they have, if you want to get quite granular, you can look at what kind of firewalls, what kind of switches, a lot of detail around that. And around the support system that's going to be there for you post-sale. Do they have a client success management team? What does their IT look like? Do they have 24/7 support for you? These are all questions that you should really ask up front of your service provider. And you should also ask for a full breakdown of your fees. The money that you're paying that service provider, how much of that is actually going to the staff member? That's a really important question. I think for us, extremely transparent with our fees. We show, you know, breakdown of everything across the whole board, including what we charge as a facility fee. Whatever the staff charges are, we do a direct pass-through, and we even provide our customers with copies of their payslips for the pay periods that go past during invoicing.
Yeah, that's incredible, isn't it? And it's so in-depth, and I think that, you know, you and I are in the industry, and we kind of understand all this, and it's becoming expected, but so many people overseas, they don't really have the insight. And what worries me generally is a lot of people come into the outsourcing world looking to cut costs and to save. And so they sort of move that mentality across into the service provider and the facilities. They're like, you know, do they really need this stuff? Do they, you know, do we need to pay this? Do we need to pay a premium? Can't we just get people working from home? And you're so right that you know, you really need to do things properly. And especially in the Philippines where, you know, if you don't do things properly, the sort of standard or average is maybe a lot less than what you might expect in your own home country. And it's really just, you know, I encourage people to sort of, you know, potentially try and save 70%. Don't try and push to 80 or 90 because it really impacts the quality, reliability, and also, you know, the satisfaction and longevity of your staff as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And I couldn't agree more with that. You know, realistically, if you're already saving 70%, what does that extra 10% make for you? What does that, what impact does that make on your business? If we're talking about, like, particularly in Australia and some of the roles we're filling in the US, $100,000 Australian, right? And that person is costing you, and bearing in mind, that's salary only. That's not including all the extra on costs and stuff like that that go associated with employing somebody in the, you know, in Australia, in Canada, in the US. When you think about the total cost of an employee in we'll use Australia, for example, or the US, there's obviously healthcare, there's tax, there's everything else that goes along with it. What about the computer? What about, you know, the MSP that has to monitor the computer? All of these bits and pieces that go into calculating total employee cost. Now, if you're saving 70%, right, that's $70,000 that's just been added to your bottom line on a like-for-like comparison based on skill, tenure, and education. Does that 10% really make sense to sacrifice even further to get somebody who is not the right fit for the job, who doesn't have the right technology in place? He'd be banging your head against the wall sometimes, I think.
Exactly. And, you know, people go for that extra 10%, but what are they sacrificing? You know, they're sacrificing the reliability and the quality. And that's when the people sort of walk away with their head shaking going, you know, this outsourcing thing didn't work. And it's a shame really, isn't it? Because there are better options out there. There's high quality, you know, kind of enterprise level options out there, and you still save a ton. And it's just finding that happy ground where you get the reliability and the facilities and the scalability, but not trying to push that limit too far.
Yeah, and it is true. And I think that, you know, that's where a lot of people, and our research found where a lot of people had been burnt, is they went that extra mile to save that extra dollar. And I think my CFO has a saying for it. I think it's penny wise, pound foolish, right? Mm. And they went that little bit further to save that extra dollar because they were really all about that percentage. And they walked away extremely dissatisfied and upset and frustrated and, you know, beyond consolement. And they were actually a big part of the survey. What went wrong for you? Why did you walk away from offshoring? Well, it's because the service provider didn't facilitate this and the staff didn't know that. And it's crazy some of the things that we hear. Mm-hmm. I think one of the big things to understand as well is when you speak to your service provider, ask them about the recruitment process. What does that look like? How many steps are involved? How many interviews? And how many people will get through? How many qualified people you should the client expect to see in the final interviews? For us, it's a very in-depth process. You know, we don't turn around staff in 7, 10, 14 days. For us, our minimum time period from when a client signs up with us to the first interview that they'll have with a fully vetted candidate is a minimum of 21 days.
Right.
Now,
that's and so this is number 2 and number 3 of the 6X success factors, isn't it? Number 2 is hiring the right offshore staff, and also start by hiring senior staff. And I think both of those, you know, they're absolutely critical, aren't they? And as you're alluding to now, it's a specialty in itself to actually recruit and onboard staff properly.
Yeah. And when you think about how much recruitment firms charge in Australia or America for that matter, you know, 20%, usually up to 20% of the actual annual salary. So in some cases, that's $20,000, $25,000, right? And they charge that much because it's a very in-depth process, and you wouldn't want to rush that process when you're hiring someone domestically. You want to get the right person for the right job.
And what do you say to people, or, you know, if outsourcing supplier has offered them Johnny, who's sitting on the bench, who's available, can start tomorrow? What do you, what, you know, What do you advise if people have said, well, this other BPO has offered, you know, they've already got staff, they can start tomorrow?
Look, you know, great question. And I think that it's important to understand the client's needs. So we take the time to get to understand what our client's needs are and really sit down and talk to them about their business, and not just about what they're trying to achieve today, but what their long-term goals are, overarching goals are for the next 12 months. If we understand the business, then we can help them find the right person for their business. Look, you know, hey, listen, maybe Johnny, the sitting on the bench, is a perfect match for the customer. But for me, we hire each person specifically to suit each client's requirements, right? That way we make sure we have a perfect match. And that's why we have such low attrition overall.
And we have, you know, prospective clients come to us and say, you know, do you think you can find this person? And it might be a developer or an accountant or, you know, and I just remind them that there's 110 million people in the Philippines, and you know, just like in the US or Australia, there's the Ivy League universities, there's incredible graduates, there's, you know, the whole range of professional executive experience. We will definitely be able to find that one candidate that you require. And you know, so it's, and maybe if it's a really obscure or really specialized role, it might just take a little bit longer, but those stellar candidates, they're out there, aren't they?
100%. And we see it time and time again. I had a requisition just recently for a management accountant for a firm in Australia. Very specific about their requirement. It was 7+ years of really in-depth Australian tax accounting experience. They had to have an in-depth knowledge of the tax system in Australia, right? So you imagine someone that's employed in the Philippines, who's educated in the Philippines, went to university here, but has an in-depth working knowledge to a very senior degree of an accounting system for a foreign country, right? But yet we found the person 27 days. So look, there is a, for whatever you need, if you can do it in front of a computer or you can do it remotely, you can find the staff in the Philippines. There is no doubt in my mind whatsoever. As obscure as they come, we tend to find them.
And related to that, you suggest start by hiring senior staff. Why is that?
Yeah, it's so much easier when you do it that way. It's funny. So you think about it this way. When you hire a new staff member, irrespective of where you are in the world, you need to invest a certain amount of time with that person to make sure they get up to speed on how you like things done. They may already be very well professionally versed, but they don't have an in-depth understanding of how you like things done, the things that are idiosyncratic to your business and your organization. What you want to do is, because you are saving so much, you spend a little bit more to get someone that's more well-tenured, someone that is going to ramp a lot faster. So you'll see ROI on the other side a lot quicker. Then what you can do after that, subsequently, any hires you do after that, you can bring in people that are a little more junior, because that senior person in the Philippines will be taking care of them and advising them and guiding them on how you like things done overall.
Yeah, it's kind of the... Well, it's building a hierarchy, isn't it? And a lot of people they can potentially go wrong by hiring maybe 10 VAs in the Philippines, and all of the VAs are bouncing up to the employer. And, you know, of course, the employer can't get any work done. Instead, you need sort of a hierarchical structure evolving where work is checked off, signed off, and then you only have one kind of point of contact within the Philippines, or you try and minimize the amount of direct reports. And the teams also refer to them as pioneers. Yeah, they, in the Philippines, it's getting that first pioneer who's a little bit more senior, who can pick up the processes quicker, who can then run with those processes and build the team around it. And you know, as you said, it's kind of a pathway to success, isn't it?
Yeah, and that was actually, funnily enough, that was point 10 on the list. That's quite interesting. Using a staggered approach, right? So example today, I had a prospective client of ours that we just signed up this afternoon. He said to me, Justin, look, I want to hire 7 recruiters. And I said to him, look, let's hit the anchors a little bit here. Let's just hire one senior, get them up to speed 2 or 3 weeks, 4 weeks, get them have an in-depth understanding of your business, your organization, what your goals are, what you're trying to achieve. Then you can bring on, you know, 2 or 3 a week for the next couple of weeks after that. By having a staggered approach, you avoid that situation you just mentioned, right, where there's one point of contact in the home country that's getting 10 emails, 10 phone calls, everyone's checking on everything, and that poor person can't do anything, and their stress level goes through the roof. But if you bring on the first one and have a staggered approach after that, that is one of the critical success factors, because then you'll have that pace that you need. Now, obviously, people need to ramp quickly. I get it. But it's really, you know, you've got to slow it down just a little bit for that first hire, get that first one up and running, and then look at the second and third and fourth after that.
Yeah, I completely agree. And the next step then, what is the one after that?
Look, you know, funnily enough, there's a few other ones in between. There's obviously formalizing business processes, which is really important as well. Whenever you do offshoring, you need to, and the Philippine people really love processes and procedures and having that driven there. And we find that a lot with all of our staff across most industries that we deal with. Documentation is really important in any business. And I think for all SME businesses out there, look, I've been guilty of this myself, having run SME businesses for most of my life. Documentation, when you're in a startup mode, is the last thing that's on your mind, right? You're really thinking about, hey, listen, I've got to get through this week, next week, the week after. And by the time you reach a certain volume, you go back, you go, oh, wow, and now I've got to hire externally. I don't have time to spend with these people to bring them up to speed or to train them one-on-one. Now I need to build out documentation. Mm-hmm. My suggestion to anybody that's looking at offshoring, start your documentation process sooner rather than later. It's going to absolutely help you no matter where you hire around the world, because it's going to be, you can turn around and give that to somebody and say, okay, here's the baseline, go through this, watch this, come back to me with the questions, rather than having to sit there and walk them through every single step, every single bit of your business individually, one by one.
Yeah, it's, you know, and again, I think it's such a shame when people walk away from outsourcing and shaking their head and saying it doesn't work or it's disappointing. And, you know, often there's obviously two sides to every story, but it's difficult managing people, you know, regardless of where they are, where they're sitting, where they're from. And it's a skill in itself to properly delegate, to properly build processes. And some people, you know, especially if they're in a small or startup business, haven't done it before, or, you know, there are highly experienced executives that just aren't great managers. They're not great people. And I'm one of those people, you know, I openly accept that I am not brilliant at managing people directly and managing teams. So these are all skills that come into the picture when you're basically building a business, and offshoring is just one part of that. So it's sometimes difficult to tease apart where the issue is or where issues is or where the gateways to success are. Huh?
Yeah, and very, very true, right? And that's one of the big reasons, as a part of our onboarding process, we have weekly roundups with both the new staff member and the new client for the first 6 weeks. Our customer success managers are 100% there, dedicated to make sure that that process for our clients is really smooth. We have obviously a dedicated HR manager that looks after every new client, but the customer success managers go one step beyond. They'll have a 15-minute roundup with the new staff member, look at some of the challenges they've had this week, what are some of the wins they've had this week, and they'll go back to the client on the following day and do the same thing. And they have that for the first 6 weeks to make sure that any problems that come up are addressed really quickly, and that we can build on that to keep the momentum going. After that initial six-week period, then the customer success managers, who are obviously they're dedicated to the clients, have a monthly roundup. They have a standing monthly roundup with them just to go over anything they want to talk about. You know, and it's having that kind of customer first mentality that really makes it so much easier to do business, and being very open and transparent with clients, they can see that we really do care, not just about, you know, the dollars and cents, but making sure that it's successful for them and that their business grows, not just with us, but overall. Because if it's good for their business back home, it's good for us as well.
Yeah, and I often see, you see clients come over here, and even if they're a pretty sophisticated, mature company, they don't really have processes. They don't have the processes and SOPs that maybe they should for the maturity of their company. And they start to offshore, and they realize that, you know, they need these things, they build these things out. And then you actually see these companies that you know, started off thinking they're the master of the universe, really going through this incredible maturation process. And in 6-9 months, you know, it becomes a better, more solid, more durable company, because things are written down, processes are in place, there's redundancy structures in place. It's amazing to see, isn't it? You know, just by creating that structure.
Yeah, totally agree. And, you know, I think that what they also start to see, and this is one of the other points that they have that we discovered, is there can be some gaps in the technology piece that they have, right? And understanding what skills they need to place to get that in place. So a lot of clients that we deal with have managed service providers that take care of their clients back home, but they also then integrate with our technology here in the Philippines. So one of the big things that we have and when we look at is what's the endpoint security like? How secure is the computers that we supply to the staff, right? So for example, all the computers that we supply are fully locked down, they're fully monitored. The client will tell us what websites they want to have access to, and everything else is locked down. All personal emails are locked out, any kind of live chat is locked out. The client will tell us what they need access to, and that's the only thing we give them access to. Now, even the USB drives are locked down, actually, for that matter. Now, that's not because we don't want people to enjoy their workplace, but that's because we have a lot of clients we deal with in the US and other countries around the world that have really quite sensitive data. So by having one rule for all, it ensures that the client's information is secure. And I have many clients that come to our facility, let me tell you honestly, and they'll tell me point blank that the security that we have in place, both physical and technical, is actually more advanced than the stuff they have in their own offices back home.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And people aren't aware, but there's pretty strict data laws in the Philippines as well, isn't there? Heavy regulation in the Philippines to ensure that data is protected and privacy and security is in place.
Yeah, that's right. And we obviously, because we deal with clients all over the world, we have to abide by the Philippine data laws, but also the ones for each region that we deal with as well. So, yeah, I got to take my hat off to our head of IT, Joe. He's fantastic at what he does, and he really stays two steps ahead of everything that I can possibly think of, and a lot of times in front of what the clients can think of too.
Nice. Well done, Joe. The next one, I think we might have already covered this, but manager to manage teams. What do you mean by this?
Yeah, so that really comes back to that senior staff member to be able to manage the team. So you and the other point is having a manager in the foreign country that can manage the team, or a single point of contact inside the foreign country to manage the teams out here in the Philippines. So it's really good to have a consistent point of contact for your team in the Philippines back home. Now, if you do something like that, then it obviously builds a lot more rapport, and the communication can flow a lot faster by doing that. Obviously, with a lot of firms that we deal with and a lot of companies that we deal with, one person may have multiple points of contact that they have to, you know, as we all do in a lot of organizations, have to report to. But if you can sort of limit the number of people they have to report to, data can flow a lot faster. There's a lot less confusion about things. And it's the same as any office in the world. If you've got to report to five people and all five of them have the same seniority, what job do you do first, right? So it's important to have a manager as a point of contact on the other side just to control that data flow.
Yeah, and it's just really having clarity, isn't it? And again, you know, is this an outsourcing issue, or is it just an issue about how to run a business efficiently? And a lot of the principles of outsourcing well really are kind of management fundamentals, aren't they? And also, you know, kind of team and HR fundamentals.
Yeah, it's things that, you know, that we know that we're supposed to be doing in our home countries, but a lot of the time we sort of neglect to do properly. So it's just multiplied by adding in that layer of staff externally. So, you know, we know all these things. You're exactly right. You know, we know these things about managing a business, and we just got to implement them better.
And the next one then, I see this a lot, getting the onshore team comfortable with offshoring. What can you, how can we help with that process?
Yeah, it's funny. It's interesting, right, Derek, because a lot of the time when we begin to offshore, or a company begins to offshore, the first response, right, and you'd know this as well, what's the first response of the employees and the onshore team?
They're taking our jobs.
Exactly right. Yeah. There's this fear that they're going to replace me. I'm not going to have a job. We're offshoring, we're outsourcing. So what is my job security going out the window? The answer is no, right? Companies that we see that offshore often actually end up employing more people onshore. I'll give you an example of this. We deal with one company. I can't actually name who they are, but they're a telecommunications company in Australia. And what they had is they had a small budget, but they needed people to set appointments for them to be business development specialists for them, right? And what they would do is they'd set appointments for the managers in Australia to go out and sit with these companies and sell different phone contracts and whatnot, right? Now, the reality is this is a small SME business. They couldn't afford to hire, you know, people in Australia at $60,000, $70,000 a year. So they hired a small team here, and that team set so many appointments for them, they had to hire more business development managers in Australia. I think they actually got to about 5 business development managers from one within 12 months. So are they taking work away from you? No. They're helping you. They're helping the business to build more business, to employ more people domestically.
Mm. Yeah, it's a virtuous circle, isn't it? And again, you know, getting people to work well together is not just an outsourcing thing. I think it really can bubble up to the surface a lot more because there is more of a them and us. But even within bigger organizations, you know, the accounting department don't agree with the marketing department and the marketing don't agree with the sales department. And especially if it's split over a few floors, you know, there's not that sort of homogeneity, I suppose. And it's really very similar when there's people in the Philippines. But I think there's just sort of broader considerations in terms of cultural differences, communication differences, the fact that people are communicating remotely, digitally, maybe asynchronously. So there's all these things to really kind of factor in and consider and build structures around so it doesn't become an issue.
Yeah, and you're 100% right. Open communications is one of the key success factors we've seen come up time and time again with the information we got back from Bond. You really have to have clear communication, the same way that you can't walk around an office and not communicate with other people around you, right? Or hire somebody new and put them in the corner and not speak to them. Well, you can't do the same thing to your offshore team as well. You have to be engaged with them. They want to be a part of your team. They want to be a part of the organization. They want to contribute to the organization, and they want to be communicated with and be a part of the company as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, humans are no different wherever they are in that regard. They want to be a part of the community, don't they? And they want to feel like there's opportunities for them, career ladder, and obviously as well, it's an enjoyable workplace, and you know they're going to get respect and community. It's pretty simple, isn't it, when you boil it down to the basics?
Yeah, and one of the things that we do as a part of our management of the staff is we also help subsidize staff's further education for people who are a little bit more older, like myself. They might not necessarily want to do any further education themselves, but then we would sponsor their education, their children, right? And that constant development and upskilling is a part of our core values. And we do that so that they continue to add value to themselves, but also, you know, add value to the clients as well and the client's business. So that's something that we don't charge the clients for. It's something that we do quite a lot of internally and we do externally as well to help add value to the client's businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I reckon we have covered all 10. It's been a little bit all over the place, but do you want to just list off very quickly the 10 so that we can recap for people? And I absolutely agree. I think that these are spot on and it's absolute gold. And everyone, when they're beginning or even if they're in their outsourcing journey, should really look at all of these with a microscope and ensure that all of these are in place. Again, you know, whether you're starting or whether you're in the journey, to make sure things are working well.
Yeah, definitely. So number one, selecting the right offshore partner. Very critical. Number two, hiring the right offshore staff. Starting with the right person is really, really makes a big difference. The next one is handover training and open communication. Make sure that you do have some training materials handy, or if you don't, that your service provider can help you with that and help you with the training schedule to make sure that everything runs smoothly. Manager to manage the teams. Think about who inside your organization in your home country is going to manage the offshore staff. Who is going to be that point of contact? Getting the onshore team, I should say, comfortable with offshoring. The best thing to do is not try and slip it in under the radar. Have an open conversation with your teams back home. It's funny, you know, Derek, how many times open conversations comes up in this list. having the right tech in place. Okay, making sure you have the right technology in place to make sure that people are successful. Obviously, with cloud-based almost everything now, that's not such a big issue as it was previously. Formalizing business processes, can't stress this enough either, even onshore or offshore. It's a really critical part of scaling any business. And last but not least, in any way, shape, or form, is using a staggered approach. Don't go in guns blazing. try and hire one staff at a time, get them up and running. Once you get the first one up, then by all means, if you want to open the floodgates, go for it.
Brilliant. Yeah, that's absolute gold. Justin, I have some questions, though, follow-up questions. You know, you mentioned tech in there, but what about tools? Can tools make or break a team? You know, should people be on Asana? Should they be on Slack, or should they be using email? Do you have any sort of insights, or doesn't it really matter?
I think it's interesting, right? It depends on what tool you use is almost irrelevant nowadays. Some people use Slack. We are very heavy in Microsoft Teams. Other people use Skype. What happens on those different mediums is what's important. So I'll give you an example. We use Teams for instant messaging, telephone calls, conferences, stuff like that. But if something needs to be done, then it gets done sent through an email. And having that separation to say, okay, if you have a quick question, contact me here. Or if you need something that is going to take me a little bit of time, or something that needs urgent, or something that needs attention from another department, then please send it by email so it doesn't get lost, right? Having a structured communication flow is extremely important. Which medium you use to do that is totally up to you. I have some clients that still prefer to pick up the phone and speak to people. So, yeah, as long as there's structure around it and you outline what that structure is.
Right. And, you know, for your US clients, the Philippines staff, it's a 12-hour time difference or, you know, a little bit different. And do you generally recommend that the staff work the same hours? Are there any problems with that? And also, what do you think about asynchronous work?
Yeah, so I think for us, we are big believers in the local, or when I say local, in the client's time zone work and in working on the client's days. So we've set up multiple agreements with the Department of Labor here in the Philippines to offset Philippine public holidays against, you know, home country public holidays. So, for example, Australia, we offset the US, we offset public holidays with UK, Canada, all over the world, really. What does that mean for our clients' operations is that they're in at 9 to 6, your local time. They are working your local days. They're off when you're off and they're in when you're in. So I'm a really big believer in that because it has to have good business continuity. Look, it does come with its own problems. There's problems with everything, but, you know, they're not insurmountable. But that's a big part, I think, of how we do business and how we advise our customers to do business too.
It's about reducing all those points of friction, isn't it? And just trying to make it as kind of normal as possible to have someone working from the other side of the globe in your business.
100%. And we have clients that are, you know, that right now it's quite drastic, as you mentioned, 12 hours difference, and that's with EST. So we have a whole team of people that are working Eastern Standard Time at the moment, and people, the funny thing is that everyone wants to, people in the Philippines, like people everywhere in the world, have certain shifts that they like to work, right? So I have no problems filling a night shift. There are certain type of people that just love that. And there are some people that just want to work day shift. At the end of the day, because we hire each person specifically to suit each client, they know what they're getting into before they sign up.
Yeah, and it is so, so normalized in the Philippines. And I don't think US clients can quite come to terms with the fact that people are going to be working overnight, but it is just so normalized in the Philippines. And it's really been happening for about 25 years now, 30 years, and it's just so ingrained in the culture. And people enjoy it because there's less traffic, it's cooler at night, they can look after kids during the day. So it really does genuinely suit a lot of people, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And like I said, we have no problems filling night shift at all. And it's interesting because I know in Australia, right, we were in the US, we had a lot of people that were having problems filling specifically technical support roles in night shift. For us, we have no problems at all.
And we've obviously all gone through big changes with COVID, and there's been a huge push towards, well, an acceptance of remote work, and people are embracing the remote tools. So it helps, I think, offshore staffing a lot. But what are your thoughts in terms of work from home or work from the office? What are your preferences and what do you advise clients?
Yeah, interesting. It's funny. I think COVID made us all sort of really push the envelope with this. And I think it's done a lot of help to the offshoring business community as a whole, because what's the difference between working from home in two streets away from your offices and working from halfway across the world? It's exactly the same. They're doing the same amount of work's being done in the same time. I think for us, the Philippines is an interesting predicament itself, because unfortunately, like a lot of developing countries in Asia, internet and power is not always stable. So we have had people work from home. Would I advise it outside of COVID? More than likely not. I would probably say no, simply because we can't control external things like power. We can't control internet. Now, in our facility, we've got a 100 kVA backup UPS system, which powers the whole floor for 3 hours, plus a generator downstairs, plus six internet connections. Now, if all of that goes down, well, I think we're all in a little bit of trouble at that point. But, you know, it's very hard to have control over those external factors when you are working in a foreign country, in a country that doesn't have a really developed, or not, I shouldn't say developed, but a very robust network.
Yeah, I agree. And I always advise people to get people working from the office, and at least starting in the office and the expectations of being in an office. And then you have the options of giving people the chance to work from home. But if you start people working from home, it's very difficult to get them into the office, isn't it? It's pretty much a one-way street there.
Yeah, almost impossible. And, you know, look, and there's always that factor, right, where, you know, and it's not so much a problem anymore because there's so much software you can use, but are they actually working? And then if you can't reach them for a moment because they're away, then it creates that seed of doubt. Then, yeah, look, for me, it's more problematic than good. And then what happens if the computer goes down? You know, in our facility, the computer goes down, we've got a brand new one sitting in a box. We just pick up one, put another one down, and we continue on with the day. Mm. So, yeah, there's so many factors that go into it, but I strongly advise my clients against it. Obviously, COVID's made us strange bedfellows with that argument, but in normal times, no, particularly in where we are, it's not worth doing, no.
It's really difficult, isn't it? Because pre-COVID, I never would have entertained people outsourcing home-based. And now, you know, there's been a big cultural shift and people have been forced to work from home as well. But you almost sound like a bit of an old fuddy-duddy if you say people work better and respond better when they're working from an office, you know, and it almost makes you kind of look like the old school. But I really do believe that there's more efficiency, there's more community, there's more synergy when people all come into the office, they dress up for the office, they have a good working environment, they have all the reliable IT and backups, redundancies, hardware. It's a world apart from people working in their home environments in the Philippines.
Yeah, totally agree. It's funny that as well, when you think about life as a whole, we'll take work out of it. Most people meet their partners at work. Mm. Right? And if we're all working from home, you're not, that sense of connection is not going to happen, right? Above and beyond that, you think about other things like social interaction and how do you get a corporate culture going when you're the only one at your workplace?
Right? Yeah. And like, how do you induct a 20-year-old or a new graduate into what professionalism is, what discipline is, what you know, office life is about, if they don't see anything, you know, if they're sitting on their bed in their pajamas doing work? It's, you know, I don't know how it's going to happen longitudinally once, you know, generations have never been into an office.
Yeah, and look, you know, I think that you're right. Maybe we are the old fuddy-duddies. Maybe it's just the way that we think, but I totally agree with you. I love going to the office. Like, I get dressed, I'm in there early, I can do some work, I get on the phone, my clients, I have that time, I have that space. And what's good is when I finish work, I disconnect, I unplug, I go, mm-hmm. Maybe I don't, but my staff do. They go home and they have their time at home to themselves. There's no, you know, after hours, there's no working, you know, 12, 14 hours, you know, a day, which something you tend to do when you're working at home. There's lots of research around about this, actually, quite funny, and it'll show that there is higher efficiency, higher output when working from home. That's not to say that there's higher efficiency. It just means a lot of the time that people are putting in more hours.
Yeah.
Which is bad long-term for your staff because you're going to burn them out.
Oh, it's a tough argument, isn't it? There's almost like this sort of religious sort of fervor for remote work now, and I'm just not sure. I'm not sure if I'm being the old fuddy-duddy or really whether it's people kind of kidding themselves. You know, I'm a pretty disciplined guy. I work out most days, but I can never work out from home. I always need to go into the gym or into an environment that's conducive to having a workout. You know, so
yeah, it's about that mental game on as well. Like, you know, you get into the gym and your mind switches modes. right? And you get into the office and your mind switches modes. It switches from, you know, I'm at home modes. Okay, what have I got to do today? Right? And it's having that, I think for me personally, is that having that switch to turn around and say, okay, right, what are we up to now? And then when I'm at home, I'm at home. Mm. Right? And it's important to have that disparity, I think.
Wow. So we've covered, you know, what sounds like incredible facilities, services. You know, it's not just the people, it's also the infrastructure, the facilities, and then it's all the kind of the support structure, the support people, the account managers all around, you know, and people must be going, you know, how much is this going to cost? But it really, you know, I don't want to put numbers into this, but generally people can save significant money, 70%, and you're dealing with best in class facilities, best in class services, and you're dealing with sort of a high degree of professionalism that can help take your company to the next level. Yeah, it's incredible. So that was a segue to, can you, like, how do you price this? Can you give us an outline of costs or cost structuring?
Yeah, totally can. So the way that we work is we have two separate charges on any of our invoices. We have whatever the staff salary is, and I think I mentioned earlier that we actually provide copies of their payslips. Whatever the staff salary is and the costs with employing that staff are direct pass through to the clients. And then we have a facility fee which covers HR, payroll, the computers, the IT infrastructure, everything else, right? And the facility fee is the same for all of our clients, irrespective if you have one staff member or 100 staff members, but we make no other money anywhere else, right? So, you know, it varies obviously from market to market, but it's a stable amount, and whatever the staff charges are is a direct pass through to the client. Very transparent. And that's something that we go through when we have our discovery calls with our clients. We find out what they're looking for, and then we show them the breakdown. Here is everything as transparent as day. And we provide that in a written document so they can see it really clearly. And there's no hidden fees with us either. There's no extra monitor fee, extra bandwidth usage fee. Everything's included. We don't sort of mess around with this hidden charges stuff.
It's great to have that transparency, isn't it? Because then, you know, you can hire a best-in-class rocket scientist, and you can also hire an entry-level administrator, and you know where you are in terms of the salaries, and then the fees are, the facilitator fees are separate then.
Yeah, and the good thing is that I can have honest conversations with my clients. If there is somebody that is cheaper, it has no impact on what we make as an organization. So if I find somebody that can do the job and is a lower cost to the client, of course I'm going to put that person forward. Now, and by the same token, if I find someone that's slightly above what the client wants to pay, and I can see that they're absolutely exceptional, I can have that conversation with them as well, because they know that no matter what, I don't make any money on their staff charges. So it makes no difference to me if you pay that person one peso or 100 million pesos, we still make the same amount.
Yeah, and that's also, you know, you advise people to hire senior staff at the beginning, and that's not because of self-interest. That's because you want to see these teams succeed. And again, having that transparent structure really helps with that, doesn't it?
Yeah, 100%. Yep.
Justin, amazing, amazing conversation. So, of course, you know, people should reach out. I just encourage people to start outsourcing and pick up the phone and have a conversation and see, you know, what someone like Justin can offer your business. Justin, if anyone wants to reach out or learn more, how can they do that?
Yeah, definitely. So the best way to reach out to us is check out our website, staffdomain.com. There's a ton of useful information and resources on there. There's a newsletter sign up. If you have any inquiries about sales, super easy, just sales@staffdomain.com, and our sales guys will get back to you. My direct email as well is justin@staffdomain.com. If you have any questions for me, I'm more than happy to speak to anybody about offshoring and advise them on their journey, irrespective if you go with us or someone else. It's really good to be in the know.
Thank you, Justin. We'll put all that in the show notes as well.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time today, Derek.
That was Justin Pavsic. He's the Managing Director of Staff Domain. If you want any of the show notes, as always, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. And if you want to ask us anything, then just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.